Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look out. His only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a doorstopper, and I love film. As John Green once said, the only way out of the labyrinth of suffering is to forgive Jim Henson for not making a sequel to Labyrinth. Listen, John Green, it's a risk. I'm glad he left it at One Perfect Film, if you ask my opinion. Every week I invite a special guest over, I tell them they've died, and then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Sharon Stone, Jamila Jamil, and even Qued Cramble, but this week my wonderful special guest is the brilliant actor and star of Community, Love, and many brilliant films. It's the unbelievable Gillian Jacobs. Get over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you'll get about 20 minutes extra chat and a secret from Gillian, and you also get the full uncut video of the episode, and it is an absolute corker. Join me over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So, Gillian Jacobs is a brilliant actor, and I was a huge fan of hers. We'd never met before we recorded this. We did it a few weeks ago over Zoom. As you'll hear, not only was she amazing, but she was also incredibly forgiving. You're going to love it. So that's it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 103 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I'm joined today by a megastar, a sitcom star, a theatre star, a film star, a improv star, perhaps, a human and a person in one. Please welcome to the show an absolute legend. Can't believe we've got her. Please welcome Gillian Jacobs!
Hello.
Thank you so much for doing this. I have to quickly ask you, how is your pandemic treating you?
You know, I'm very lucky to be safe and in good health. So, you know, I know how lucky I am. How about you?
Yes, thank you. I'm doing all right. I'm finding that being locked in a house very much magnifies all the things that are wrong with your brain. And that's interesting. Mm-hmm. It is a real magnifying glass, but all fine here.
Now I believe you when you say it.
Now I have to tell you something. Now, for someone who is a film buff, I had a gap in my film knowledge, and I had not seen Don't Think Twice, which I watched last night. And I found it devastating. It is unbelievable, that film. That film is like Inside Llewellyn Davis for comics.
Wow, thank you.
It was, it's amazing. Can you tell, are you bored of talking about that film or can we talk about it a little bit?
No, yeah, I'm also very proud of that film. So Mike Birbiglia wrote and stars and directed the film, and it's about a improv troupe, and it's an amazing cast. Keegan-Michael Key, Kate Micucci, Tammy Sager, Chris Gethard, myself, and Mike play the improv troupe. But it's really about, you know, what is the purpose of art and life and ambition and what is more important to feel personally fulfilled or achieve objective success. It's about a lot of things and also has really funny improv in it.
Yeah. And was the improv improv?
It's a mixture. So there are certain, you know, improv in quotes scenes in the film that really you had to hit certain plot points to drive the story forward. And then they would also just have us improvise. So it's a mixture. And you said I'm an improv star, but I'm really not because...
Well, that's what I wanted to ask. Had you not done it before?
Yeah. No, I had not done it before. And so we had like a 2-week boot camp before we started filming. And Mike had various performers and teachers from Upright Citizens Brigade in New York come in and teach us workshops. And then he claims he told us, I claim he didn't, that he also scheduled performances for us at just Upright Citizens Brigade, other improv theaters in New York. And so after rehearsal, he was like, okay, we got to go, got to get over to the theater. And I was like, what are you talking about? We've got a show. I've only had one improv class that had just happened. And I had to do, so I was having to improvise in front of paying audiences that weren't told, like, this is like a, this is basically rehearsal. They were expecting a real show. So that probably the most afraid I had been in a long time.
And were they good, those shows that you did with no
I definitely committed some early improviser no-nos, like just exiting out of a scene when I had backed myself into a corner. But yes, then also the rush and the high of like something really working. But I think smartly realized that I was up there with like all stars and I should just kind of watch and learn more than try and really push myself out there. But the intimidating thing about the film was my character was supposed to be really good.
Normally you seem really good. You come across, that's why I assumed, I really think, because it's so hard to do live comedy on film to make it work. And it really feels legit. And I thought, I just assumed you must have done loads of it and that you must have done months of practicing. And
No. And, you know, I think that's a testament to Mike because he really thought very carefully about how to film it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had an audience for those scenes that were people who liked comedy who, you know, I think maybe Mike went on Facebook and got them. So they were excited and engaged to be there. They were great. I mean, if they hadn't been responsive and excited, it would have been deadly.
Yeah.
So the audience that we got for the film was amazing. But no, it was very intimidating. And normally I would, as a lazy actor, be like, oh, well, my character's not that good. But I couldn't do that in this instance. So it was really scary. I'm also not good at, I'm not an impressionist. And so there's a section in the film where Keegan-Michael Key and myself are auditioning for the movie's version of SNL. And we're working on our impressions. And Mike originally had certain impressions in the script. And I was like, I don't know if I could do those. But I really liked Katharine Hepburn as a kid. Maybe I could do Katharine Hepburn.
You do have really good.
Thank you. I loved that. We licensed this clip of her on the Dick Cavett show where she's basically telling them to completely rearrange the set, which I really enjoyed.
It's really, really impressive. I like the idea of you going to Mike Birbiglia early on and going, what if my character, I've had the thought, what if my character's shit at improv?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be useful?
What if I'm, like, really bad?
Because you did, what I do know about you is you went to Juilliard and you did a play recently, right?
And I did, like, 2 years ago I did a play,
okay. Because I think there is a huge difference between acting and comedy and live comedy. And did you find any of the skills you had learned as a sort of stage performer were useful? Or did you go like, oh, fuck, this isn't helping?
I hadn't really thought about that. I'm sure just the fact that I'd performed in front of live audiences since I grew up doing theater. So that part of it. But no, I mean, with the theater, it's the complete opposite. You have a set script. You've had weeks of rehearsal. You've had technical rehearsals. You've done it, you know, till you know it inside and out. So I guess the only part that came into play was I'd performed in front of live human beings before.
Yeah.
But no, I think, you know, I think improv and stand up are so intimidating to me. I have no interest in stand-up comedy. It's so scary to me. You have nothing to hide behind. At least with the improv, you have other people on stage with you to pick you up. But I mean, the thought of doing stand-up comedy.
You've never done stand-up.
Oh my God, no.
Well, the upside of improv is the other thing you have to fall behind is like, well, there was, we just made it up. There was nothing.
Yeah.
But yes. I've done a couple of improv shows as like an experiment, and it is the scariest thing I ever did.
Oh, so terrifying.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's horrible.
Horrible.
But also, what a buzz. But awful.
What awful.
Yeah. So you never, after the film, you thought, I'm not doing any more of that. You were like,
no,
thank you,
like,
good night.
There was another time where the film premiered at South by Southwest and Mike booked us an improv show in Austin. And I had shot all night. I did this show called Love, and I had shot all night, gone straight from set to the airport, flown to Austin, gotten ready and went to. So I had been up for like 24 hours when we did that improv show in Austin. And so
That's good,
I was so tired.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was less scared because I was so tired. I was, you know, I wasn't really on that, on this astral plane anymore. And so it was slightly less intimidating. And it was actually, I think everyone was kind of tired. Like it got weirdly emotional. Yeah, and Tammy Sager is such an incredible writer, improviser, actor, and she got very emotional doing this improv show in Austin and started crying, and people in the audience were crying. So it was kind of a nice relief, too, that, like, you're like, oh, improv can kind of be anything. It can be emotional as well as funny. But, yeah, that's the last time I
should. That is – I mean, I would have just shit myself.
That's you want to.
Yeah, and especially if everyone else is like, yeah, it's fine, we're just doing an improv show. You'd be like,
I mean, you know, there are people in that cast who've done it for years and years and years and regularly. And, you know, for them, this was nothing. And for me, I was just white knuckling it through the whole experience.
Well, it is. It's such a good film. And because I had very little experience, but I did the monologues for a couple of UCB shows. And like everyone that was in the group is in that film. Do you know what I mean? As a type. You go.
Oh, yes.
As like, I saw that character. I mean, it's brutal. It's brutal, that film.
Yeah.
Really.
I'm very proud of that one. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah.
I think it's a good film.
Julian, I've forgotten to tell you something.
Oh, no.
Oh, shit.
Oh, God.
This is really bad. I should have told you before we started recording so you could have had some time to at least prepare yourself. But,
okay.
Oh, fuck. What a donut.
Oh, God. I'm on tenterhooks. What?
I feel really sure. I probably should have even emailed you about it. Anyway, I'll just say it. I'll say it. You've died.
Did I?
Yeah. Shame.
Such a shame.
How did you die?
Well, I was a physical coward in life, and I finally decided to take a risk and go skydiving, and I guess I'd been right all along. It didn't go well.
No. What, it didn't open, or you went through a spike? What happened?
It didn't open. I got too nervous. I couldn't release the parachute, and I died.
I like that as a way to go.
Yeah, because, you know, I was too afraid to do anything remotely like that in life. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to go for it. So it was thrilling, and then it was terrifying. And then I thought I was right all along. Yeah. I shouldn't have taken any physical risks in life. And then it was all over.
Buzz of self-righteousness as you hit the ground. And your gravestone says, I was right, suckers.
I affirm myself.
How old do you think you were when you die? What would you like?
I'd like to live long enough where I finally figured out something about life and how to live it. But before it became too uncomfortable physically, or, you know, I was facing too many things that made life uncomfortable. Tomorrow? I don't know.
That's pretty soon.
I don't know. I mean, my grandfather lived to 95 and was in pretty good health right until the end. So I guess it's dependent on, you know, your quality of life.
Do you worry about death a lot? Is it something you think about a lot?
I have always been, as I said, very afraid of taking any kind of physical risk. So I don't know if that's fear of death or fear of injury. But yeah, I'm not one to really to take many risks at all. My dad got me a ski lesson when I was a child, when I was like 6 or 7. And he left for the hour for me to have my ski lesson. And he came back and he asked the teacher, how did it go? And she said, well, she refused to move the entire time because she said it was too dangerous and didn't understand why anyone would want to slide down a mountain covered in snow and ice. So I've always been very sure.
The thing is, you're inarguably right. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, what do you say to that kid? No, it's perfectly safe to chuck yourself down a mountain.
Yeah, so I, you know, he also told me another story that he, for some reason, was visiting my elementary school. And in gym class, the teacher had set up a series of cardboard boxes that we were supposed to run and jump over like hurdles. And my dad said, I ran up to the first one, moved it to the side, ran to the second one, moved it to the side, and refused to jump.
You're a real smart kid.
I don't know. I don't know if real smart or just didn't want to exert myself physically at all, right. So I'd find a workaround.
I think that's smart. I think you saw the world in the correct way and you were just like, everyone's fucking mad. Why are you putting all these boxes in the way? I like that. Do you think there's an afterlife? Do you believe something will happen when you die? Or do you think that's it? I'm sorry that I opened with such big questions. We've only just met.
I mean, why bother with small talk?
100% agree.
My immediate response is no, but then I do recognize that I don't know everything about the universe, so maybe, let's go with the maybe, but my gut is no.
Are you, like, okay with that, with the sort of idea of absolutely nothing after this?
I don't know that I have a choice in it, so I guess I have to be okay with it if that's what I believe it will be. I'd rather that than eternal torment.
That's a lovely way of looking at it. I like that those were the two options. Nothing or torment.
You're getting an insight into my worldview.
Yeah. It's really interesting. It was very binary. It's torture.
I know.
Pain.
I have to break out of that. I have to stop thinking in those terms.
Pain and torture or nothing? And you chose nothing. I'd choose nothing over pain and torture.
Between the two, right? Yeah. Nothingness?
I'm sad that those are the options, but okay.
I know.
I'll take it. Hey, listen. I've got good news, though.
What?
You were wrong. There was a third option.
Oh, thank goodness.
And it's being stabbed multiple times by devil. No. The other option is there is a heaven. And it's well nice, and no one makes you do any physical anything. You don't have to do anything. You just sit down, and people look after you. It's almost like being in an old people's home. It's lovely. And in this heaven that's perfectly safe, no snow, nothing to trip over, no one says jump over this, they're obsessed with films.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, weird, right? And what they want to know is they want to know about your life through film. And the first question they ask you is, what is the first film you remember seeing, Gillian Jacobs?
My name's Gillian.
Fuck. Well, we're going to have to start again, actually, Gillian.
Okay.
So we've done 16 minutes. We're going to just take a little pause.
You can just go, Gillian. Every time my mother cursed me with this name that no one knows how to pronounce.
You have to correct people. I mean, it's embarrassing that I didn't know that because, you know, I must have heard someone say it.
You know what? The vast majority of people who have my name spelled the way my name is pronounce it Gillian. But my mother just saw it in a book and thought it was Gillian and named me Gillian. So there are a few of us, but there are far more Gillians. And I think in the UK, it's Gillian almost all the time, right?
It's no excuse, but I appreciate you giving me ways out of this.
Gillian Anderson has made life rather difficult for me.
Yes, but then there was Gilligan's Island, and that
Thank you for bringing that up. That was my entire childhood.
Okay, now this is right. We're starting again. Let's take another pause. Right.
I just wanted to tell you
so that we didn't do an hour of me calling you the wrong name. And to be fair, if you'd said it at the end, it would be worse.
Yes.
If after we'd had a lovely time, Kevin, you said, by the way, you've insulted me this entire time.
I'm not insulted by it. I mean, I got, you know, when I first went to school, I was, you know, you, cause you were in your very little, you're just with your family and everybody knows how to pronounce your name.
Yeah.
And then you go to school for the first time and you encounter, you know, people who don't know how to say your name. And I used to get very indignant, but then I realized I had to not get upset by it, or I was just going to be upset all the time.
Listen, I'm so, so glad that I triggered some trauma early on in the
podcast. You've already told me that I died.
Yeah. This has been very heavy for you. My God. All right. But listen, we got to heaven, didn't we? We got to heaven and it was nice. And everyone's like, Gillian. And you've been there 3 weeks and no one's pronounced it wrong. And it's the only way to say it in this heaven. And they're like, Gillian, what's up? And they go, what? They go, Gillian, what is the first film that you remember seeing?
I think the first film I remember seeing is, they must have done like a new print of Snow White that was in theaters. Yes. My dad took me to see Snow White and I was very afraid of the witch.
Amazing. Where did you grow up, may I ask?
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it was just you and your dad went?
Yeah, I think I went to more films with my dad as a kid in the theater than my mom.
That's nice. And do you remember the theater, where it was, where you saw it, like what that was
there
like?
There was a mall that you could walk to from my house. Yeah. So I think most of the films I saw growing up were at this Galleria, and they had a Cineplex, and I remember, you know, going to the Galleria a lot.
And did you think, oh, this is something special, I want in on this? Or did you think, I'm just scared?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was very jealous of Macaulay Culkin as a child.
I think I was too.
Right? Because he was a kid that was a huge star.
Yeah.
And I was very jealous of him and his career.
Yeah.
And I remember looking in the bathroom mirror and going, I'm coming for you, Macaulay Culkin.
I thought you were going to say you were stood in the bathroom mirror going like that a lot.
No.
Practicing being.
Isn't it funny? Like, I didn't even really get that as a child. You know that. But it was just funny.
Yeah. I still don't get it, but it's funny.
It's the aftershave, right? It burns. Yeah. Isn't that the joke?
Yeah, I think so. But I've never quite understood the logic of it, because I think you have to shave first for it to burn. Unless you had shaved. Listen.
I don't know. I remember him with the toothbrush, buying the toothbrush at the drugstore. Yeah, but I definitely, I don't think I had a concrete ambition to be an actor before my mom signed me up for an acting class, because the school called my mother and said I had no friends, and I was talking to myself at recess because I wasn't playing it with anyone, so I was just walking around by myself talking to myself. And so they told my mother that she should sign me up for some kind of extracurricular activity. She said I was a very overly dramatic child, so she signed me up for an acting class. So once I got into an acting class, I was fully in, loved it. My mother had dead-on instincts. But previous to that, I don't know, I don't remember wanting to be an actor.
So it was like, if you were talking to yourself, if you could be an actor, then at least there'd be people, you know, an audience for you to talk to, and they'd appreciate the monologues.
Right? So, I was an early monologue. I remember walking, I guess I must have watched some Star Trek, because I remember walking around being like, Stardate.
How old were you when this is going on? 20.
I was 20.
21.
21. I probably was 7 or 8. Yeah, I think I started taking acting class around 8 years old.
I really like that a lot. I mean, it broke my heart a little bit. What is, other than Snow White, what is the film that scared you the most?
Okay, I had two categories of that.
Okay,
films
great.
That were films that were meant to be scary, but and then films that I found very scary for other reasons. So the film that scared me the most was watching The Exorcist at a slumber party, because also you aren't home with your family, and I probably was trying to cover how scared I was,
right?
Because I was around other kids. And I didn't want them to know how scared I was. So The Exorcist, And then there was all these films that I think I saw too young that scared me, like the Lars von Trier movie Breaking the Waves. I saw that, and my mother took me to that. And I think I was too young, and that definitely scared me, but in a different way.
In like an existential dread, what's the point of anything way?
Yeah, or like terrible things are happening in the world. Yes.
God, that's a horribly upsetting film.
It was, especially at 12.
Oof. that's a real time to receive that information.
I was talking to my mom about this recently, actually, because she was very overprotective and it kept me on a very short leash as a kid through high school. But she had a weird exception in her brain for art. So she would take me to things that were way too mature or had very adult content, and she didn't think twice about it, but she would really try to like control and shelter me in all other aspects. But I think art just got an exception in her brain. And so she took me to a national tour of Angels in America, the play, when I was really little.
Wow. All 6 hours of it or whatever.
Yeah. And I didn't know what was going on. I was little. For whatever reason, she didn't apply that same logic to art. So she would take me to a Lars von Trier movie or Tony Kushner play.
But it turned out all right. I think that was good. I think that is good for you, isn't it?
I'm so glad she did it. Yeah. I think that was really great that my mom, you know, wanted to expose me to art in all those different ways.
What did you make of Angels in America as a
sister? It was the first naked man I'd ever seen.
Oh, wow.
Wow. I didn't know who Roy Cohn was. I didn't know anything about 80s politics. I didn't know anything. It was very confusing to me.
Yeah.
Very confusing to me. Because I was just too little, I think, to understand
AIDS.
Anything. Yeah. Any part of it. But she took me.
That's incredible. What is the film that made you cry the most? Are you a crier, Gillian?
Oh, yeah, I'm a crier.
All right.
And I'm getting more sentimental as the years go on.
Okay.
Oh, that's another movie I went to see with my mother, more appropriate, though, which was You Can Count on Me, the Kenneth Lonergan movie with Laura Linney and Mark Ruffalo. And I think that resonated for my mom. You know, my parents were divorced. My mom was a single mom. So I think it really resonated for my mother and myself. And I definitely remember standing outside of the movie theater on the street, my mother and I hugging each other, crying. So that one, I mean, and that I just also thought, I mean, the performances in that movie are so amazing.
Yeah.
In the writing and the directing. But yeah, you can count on me definitely made me cry a lot.
And you'll cry anywhere, anytime.
More and more. I mean, isn't that what happens as you get older? You can start crying. All the time. Except for sometimes when you're an actor and they say action and you're supposed to cry.
Yeah.
And then it all dries up.
How do you deal with that? I've asked people this. I'm always so fascinated with people acting with the crying bit. How and if you have any tricks or...
Well, I mean, there's the standard tricks, which are like the blowing the
Mental.
Stuff in your eye.
Yeah.
But I feel like my contacts kind of like block the effectiveness of that. And so that doesn't really work for me. It just makes my eyes really red. I mean, I used to listen to certain songs over and over again or just really dredge up horrible memories. It's better when the circumstances of the character can take you there, but sometimes you gotta really...
Yeah, especially if it's take 12 or whatever, I think. I think it's easier in a play when you have the build-up and the...
Yes, or I've learned to save it for your close-up.
Oh, interesting. Yes. Right.
And don't blow it on the first couple of takes and then you got nothing when they come to you.
Hold it in! I do think getting older means you cry more. I think that's a good observation.
Oh, you know, I have a great story about that, actually. One of the first movies I ever did, Oh my God. My brain just suddenly, John Malkovich was in this movie for like a couple of key scenes. Right. And there was a scene in which my character was supposed to be breaking down. And I, you know, I'm not an easy crier on screen. So it's something I've always been intimidated by. And I get nervous about, and I just wasn't going there. And John Malkovich, as the other actor in the scene, just like pushed me there, just started improvising like questions and asking me things and just basically like pushed me in character to start crying. And it was one of the most generous experiences of an actor just helping out another actor. And so, yeah.
And was that in your close-up?
Yeah. Be in a scene with John Malkovich. That's
good
my
advice.
Yeah. But that was like also just an amazing moment of generosity, you know, and realizing like, oh, you can do that for another performer. So yeah, he was amazing.
That's, you know, that's advice that anyone can use to be in the scene with John Malkovich.
John Malkovich.
That's universal advice.
It's relatable. It's achievable.
It's relatable content.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
What is the film that critically it's not acclaimed? Most people don't like it, but you love it and you don't care what anyone says.
Okay, well, you sent a, you know, list of questions with suggested things. And actually, for I think for this one, it is true for me, Mannequin 2.
Mannequin 2 Did on you the rocks. No, what's
so,
it? Is that
Mannequin
what it's called? No, that's definitely 2. That's after
so,
2 on the rocks. Mannequin
only,
on the Move.
Yes, on the Move. So we only owned a select few films when I was a child. And looking back, they must have been just random ones that were given to my mother. There was no rhyme or reason to it. And a lot of them were the lesser known sequels. And one of them was Mannequin 2. So I as a child, I probably watched, we'll save that for the films I watched the most. But okay. I watched and loved the film Mannequin 2 without ever having seen Mannequin 1 as a child.
You managed to follow it.
Oh, you know, the one that was on your sheet was Grease 2, which I also saw Grease 2 before I ever saw Grease.
Oh, yeah. That's the way
I don't
do
know.
It.
I saw a lot of things out of order.
Grease 2 is better. Is Mannequin on the Move better than Mannequin 1?
I think it is. I'd say, yeah. Is it better than... Oh, I thought you were going to say, is Mannequin 2 better than Grease 2?
Oh, are you saying it's better than Grease 2? What is it? The greatest film ever made?
I'm sorry. I just remember there's a point where she's eating a hot dog and she eats the paper that's wrapping the hot dog because she doesn't know. It's Christy Swanson, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. I loved Mannequin. Well, you know also why I think I liked Mannequin 2?
Go on.
Was that my mother worked at a department store when I was little, and sometimes she would go back to work. She would come home, get me, and she'd have to go back to work and finish working. So I would go to the department store after hours. And so I was there when all the lights were off and no one was there, and I got to be in the department store and I would like sleep. So sometimes she would like put me in a pillow display to sleep. So I think I had a real affinity for the Mannequin films for that reason, after hours at a department store.
It's also such a weird concept for a film.
Yes.
That you can't, it's a real, that's like a proper 80s film when you look back and you go, what was the concept? Oh, he falls in love with a mannequin. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Green light.
Give it all the money. But it did really well. It wasn't like they were misguided because it did well enough to warrant a sequel. So yeah. Joke's on us.
A sequel, a better sequel.
Yeah.
But however, on the flip side, What is a film that you used to love? You loved it a lot. And then you've watched it recently and you've gone, oh no, this doesn't hold up for me, for whatever reason that might be. I don't know.
I think maybe another film that I watched a lot as a child, which was The Boy Who Could Fly.
Yes. I loved that film. I haven't watched that since I was little.
I don't know that it holds up anymore.
No?
I don't think so. I loved it, but it was also kind of disturbing as a child, wasn't it? It gave me a funny feeling inside when I watched it.
It was quite like, my memory of it is quite like a serious, it's like a Judy Blume book or something. Like, it's quite dark and everyone's like got issues and the boy can fly because he's got abuse or something dark's happened. That's why he can fly.
Is he dead?
Is he God?
I don't know if that one holds up, but I loved it as a child.
I mean, you've sold it to me again, and I'm going to have to watch it today.
All right, we'll watch it. Maybe I could be wrong. I'm willing to take this answer back at any moment.
What an odd film, though. I'd completely forgotten about that. Good job. Yeah.
Well, this is like, once again, who gave my mother The Boy Who Could Fly? I don't know.
Mannequin on the Move.
Mannequin 2 on the Move. The Boy Who Could Fly.
You can keep Mannequin 1. We're not going to need that.
Yeah.
I'll just take this.
Yeah, exactly. They were giving my mom the movies that nobody wanted to watch at their house. It was like a parent sat down with their kids and they're like, we've got to get rid of some of these. You know, we have to get, they don't have any movies. Be nice. Give Gillian some movies. And they're like, oh, fine. She can have Mannequin 2 and The Boy Who Could Fly.
That's a heck of a double bill. Come on. Gillian Jacobs. What film means the most to you, not necessarily because the film is in any way good or bad, but because the experience you had around seeing the film that will always make it special to you. Could have been a first date, could have been the day you got a job. What is it?
Well, maybe the movie Twins, Danny DeVito, Arnold Schwarzenegger, because I saw that movie maybe 5 times in the theater as a kid. And I just remember asking my dad if we could go see it again. And him saying yes. And so that, to me, looking back, was a generous act of parenthood. He was being very generous with me.
Yeah.
He was allowing me to see this film over and over that he couldn't possibly have an interest in still seeing. But for whatever reason, the film Twins just captivated me as a child. And I loved it. And so I have this, I feel a real fondness that my dad indulged my desire to see the film Twins over and over again.
That's so sweet. Do you remember if he was into it or did he like have a nap while you were watching it?
Well, my dad, I mean, you know, he would also fall asleep all the time.
Okay. Maybe he just wanted to see what he'd missed.
Yeah. I think he was probably into it maybe the first 2 times. After that, he was probably just doing it for me. But I really loved that movie. And I don't know if you saw this, but Jessica Simpson dressed up. She and her husband recreated the poster of Twins on Halloween a few years ago. I saw it on Instagram and it was, you should look it up. It was, she did a really good job.
That's really good. That's funny. Okay. What is the film that you most relate to?
This is not something I thought about previously, but maybe when I saw the movie Election, I was kind of a type A serious kid. I don't know. She pushes it pretty far in that film. Maybe just being like a little kind of humorless type A as a kid. And I also remember going to see the movie Too Young, Welcome to the Dollhouse. Oof. I remember going to see that.
And you related to Heather Mazzer, to the lead girl.
I think I said, yeah, I think I did. I wasn't bullied terribly. I can't say that. I can't claim that. But did I have an easy time socially? No.
When did that change? When did you, or did it ever? Are we still?
Did it ever? Still working on it. You know what changed for me is when I was in high school, I went to this summer arts program that was kids from all over the state of Pennsylvania. And it was music, dance, drama, writing, visual arts. It was sort of all of the creative arts. And it was this, all of us were living together in the dorms at this university and taking classes and going to performances. And that, I really felt like I belonged there. It was 200 of us who all kind of had similar interests. And that was amazing. And then one of the girls from the program went to my high school And so when we came back my senior year, I definitely felt like I had new friends because of her. And I felt like I was part of this bigger group. So that was a very formative experience for me, was right. going to that. Governor's School for the Arts, which sadly has been defunded. Oh, so no. I would like the state of Pennsylvania to refund the Governor's School for the Arts.
Seconded.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, interesting. What? Okay. All right. Here we go. Gideon Jacobs. Okay. What is the sexiest film you've ever seen?
Okay. The film I found most sexy as a child was A Fish Called Wanda.
Because of John Cleese?
John Cleese and Jamie Lee Curtis. And I think she's wearing like a fuzzy sweater.
Mm-hmm.
That's, she's wearing like an, she goes to seduce John Cleese, right?
Yes.
And she's wearing maybe a fuzzy Angora sweater.
Yeah, like Ed Wood. And
yeah, that really did it for me. I don't know why.
He does something with his socks where he bounces them off his elbow.
And then Kevin Kline with like her boot. Doesn't he like take off her boots? And
yeah.
Like, I think it was really the sweater. I don't know. I found that film to be very alluring as a child.
Interesting.
I don't know what that says about me, but
I think you like a classy caper, is what that says.
I loved that movie as a kid. Yeah, loved A Fish Called Wanda.
Now, Gideon, there's a subcategory to this question, which, you know, I get embarrassed to ask some people because, you know, I don't know, we've only just met, but like if I don't ask it, people get really mad.
Okay.
The subcategory question is, it's troubling boners, worrying wide-ons. A film that you found arousing, but you weren't quite sure you should have.
Maybe at my first answer.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone in making A Fish Called Wanda thought it was like
an erotic thriller.
Awaken anything in a child.
Yeah.
Interesting. Let me think of that. I don't have an easy answer. Can we come back to that one? I can't think of one.
Yeah, we can come back to it. Of course we can.
Oh, another movie I watched a lot as a kid, that Earth Girls Are Easy. That was on cable a lot. I watched that movie a lot. And maybe I found that. Maybe them and the furry
aliens. Jim Carrey.
Yeah. Oh. Jim Carrey is a furry alien, I think I liked.
I loved that film and I haven't watched it in years. I hope it holds up. I feel like it's
that
a risky
could be
one.
In our earlier categories too.
That could be a risky. Okay, so furry. So your normal sexy one is fish.
I like
wonder.
Furry. Yes. I liked Jamie Lee Curtis in a furry sweater.
Yeah.
And I liked Jim Carrey as the alien.
You're a furry. Is that the thing?
Yeah. I'm learning things about myself today.
Yeah, I'm really, really cracking it here. You're a fairy. Okay. There's nothing wrong with it. good luck to you.
Thank you.
What? Objectively.
Okay.
Objectively is the greatest film of all time. Might not be your favorite, but it's the greatest.
Commonly received. Okay, mine might be one and the same.
Right.
The Bergman movie, Fanny and Alexander.
Oh, wow. Okay. not been said on the podcast.
I saw your list of do not mentions, I was like, no worries here because I haven't seen most of those movies.
That's great. Mannequin 2 is not on the list.
No.
Mannequin 2 and Fanny and Alexander. Can you please tell me why Fanny and Alexander?
Well, that's a movie that I think is like a true master of the craft, a late career masterpiece from one of cinema's greatest directors. And I think it is a very personal movie, but still experimental and strange. But it's, you know, about looking back on childhood and these formative experiences. I also think it's visually really beautiful. I've watched it several times. I dragged my friends to the like unedited like 5-hour version of it one time. And they all sat through it. We had like a dinner break in the middle.
Did they like it?
They liked it. Okay. Maybe not as much as I did, but yeah, I love that film.
That's amazing.
I directed a short film and I basically decided to just try and rip off Fanny and a sequence of Fanny and Alexander. So
you mean literally or as in?
Well, stylistically. Yeah, I just was basically just showing like this scene to like the production designer and the DP and being like, just do this.
That's good directing.
Yeah.
Where is that show?
I mean, you can find it on YouTube. It's called Curated. If you just search like Curated TNT on YouTube, you can.
Oh, great.
You can find it. Yeah.
Do you want to do more directing? Have you done more?
Yes, I've done more documentary directing than narrative directing. So I did. I have a episode of this new docuseries for Disney Plus. They're doing a docuseries about Marvel Comics. So I directed the first episode of that, and that's coming out sometime this year. So.
Wow. Did you love it?
I did, yeah. Mm. I knew nothing about comics going into it, but I learned a lot.
Yeah. Wow. And what about writing? Do you write? Do you want to write your own stuff?
I've written some personal essays. I've also interviewed a lot of people over the last few years for print publications. So I've done a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think I'd like to write some more essay type things.
Okay. What is the film that you can or have watched the most over and over again?
Well, I think it's probably Twins from that, going to see it like 5 or 6 times in the theater as a kid. I've seen Fanny and Alexander a lot. Heat. I've seen the movie Heat a lot.
You like a long film. You like a long film.
I'm not afraid of a long film.
You're not scared
not
of
afraid.
It?
Not afraid.
You're not scared Why of
be
running
scared?
Time?
No. If it's Michael Mann taking you on the journey.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you going to get upset? Go along for the ride.
Why are you getting out of the car? Michael's driving.
Yeah. Don't get out of the car.
Jesus.
If you're in Heat,
stay in the car.
Don't get out of the car. Stay in the car.
Right.
Yeah. Heat. I've seen Heat a lot.
Great film.
Great film.
What is the... We don't like to be negative, so we'll do it fairly quick, but what's the worst film you ever saw?
Okay, well, I have an easy answer for this because I did the podcast How Did This Get Made? And they assigned me a film to watch. And I watched this movie Body Parts for that. And that's probably one of the worst films I've ever seen.
What is Body Parts?
It's like a serial killer gets all of his limbs are cut off. And then the people who get the limbs also become killers. And then the limbs want to be back together.
That's a brilliant idea. I mean,
I think that is the premise of the film Body Parts.
It's a great, pitch. But what, yeah. Badly executed?
Badly executed, sadly.
What a shame.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
What about... Okay, so you're in comedy. You're very funny. What is the film that made you laugh the most?
Waiting for Guffman. Like a true theater nerd.
Yeah.
My friends... When I finally got those friends... Boy, did we like to sit around and watch Waiting for Guffman.
Which one are you? Did you relate to all of them?
Oh, yeah. Probably I loved the Catherine O'Hara, Fred Willard. Oh, I love the Catherine O'Hara, Fred Willard couple. Probably, you know, I've given an audition equivalent to Teacher's Pet in my day, the Parker Posey. Or I probably at some point was just like the guy who's obsessed with Corky but hasn't gotten cast in it and is just like cheering from the, yeah, I did some community theater in my day. I did dinner theater.
I don't know that we have that in England. What is dinner? It's where a play happens while you're eating. Did it happen
you get
between
a meal.
The tables?
So I remember the dinner theater I used to perform at as a child. Mm. It was sort of the theater was in the center. It wasn't in the round, though. It was in the rectangle, which I don't think is a commonly accepted stage shape.
Right.
But it was sort of like the theater was this, the stage was this rectangle, and then there were risers with tables all surrounding it. And I remember it smelled really badly in there, and a rat had died underneath one of the risers, and they couldn't get it out. And I just kept thinking, who's going to sit and eat a meal with the smell of dead rat?
So the play would happen, and people were eating and being served and talking to their waiter.
Yes. Oh, I don't know. Oh, maybe the meal is served before the play begins. I don't remember being interrupted by waiter service, but it definitely... It was one of those... I did several plays as a child where you also had to provide your own costumes, and that was one of them, I remember, as well, having to go and buy my own costume, which I didn't really realize wasn't how it was supposed to be until later.
You didn't realize what a power move that was.
Yeah.
That's great.
You're going to supply your own costume for a period piece.
Good luck. You made it, kid.
Yeah.
Now, listen, Gillian, when you, after a genuine lifetime of avoiding any kind of physical movement, let alone danger, you called a stunt double to climb over a counter. Like, you've done very well. You've survived this long. You got to 95. You were in perfect health because, frankly, you'd barely left the house. You were perfectly safe. You hadn't done
sedentary. Yeah.
Yeah. You'd made sure your house was a bungalow, so you never even had to address stairs. And one day, mm-hmm. on a whim, you said, "Okay, everyone's always, teasing me about this. Maybe I'll try skydiving," which is the obvious next move. And you got in a plane. You went skydiving. You jumped out the plane. You couldn't get your hand onto the thing that you tug, and you were trying to. Your hand got caught in the strap, and you were plummeting towards the earth. And at first, you were scared, and then you were angry, and then you were deeply satisfied because you'd been right all along. And then you smacked onto a spike.
Oh no! You've added to it.
Yeah, there was a spike. It was like the Grand Canyon. It was like one of them stalactites, and you splashed onto it. And it was pretty bad as well.
Oh no!
Yeah, so I was on a hike because I don't, I like walking a bit more than you do, and you
witnessed it.
I saw this, and I was like, bloody hell, she was right all along. She should have stayed. Anyway, I've come to like collect the remains, but you're everywhere. It's an absolute mess. There's boulders, bits of rock, everything. So I brought this coffin that was the size of you, and I'm trying to stuff you in it, but there's like mud and sand and stuff. It's like there's too much stuff to fit in this coffin, so I'm having to chop you up, push you all in, and back it all in. Anyway, I get you all in the coffin, but it's rammed. It's absolutely jam-packed, right? There's only enough room in this coffin to slide one DVD in the side with you for you to take to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. And one night, it's your movie night. What film are you taking to show everyone in heaven when it's your movie night? Gillian Jacobs, go.
My movie night in...
You have to introduce the film and show... All the people.
I'm going to be very on brand for me and be like, Agnes Varda's Vagabond. A very depressing, nearly wordless film that follows a woman wandering around the French countryside and then she freezes to death.
And everyone in heaven's like, no wonder she walks around talking to herself all day. Okay, well, thank you for showing us your film. Gillian Jacobs, you have been an absolute delight, and this has been an honour and a pleasure. Is there anything that you would like to tell the people to look out for, that you want to plug, tell them to listen for, watch, anything? You tell them now, please.
I have several films that were supposed to come out this year, but I don't know or how.
Yeah.
Or what, given the circumstances of the world. So... Right. I did a movie with Chris Ray called I Used to Go Here that was supposed to premiere at South by Southwest that I really love and very proud of. I think it has distribution now, but I don't know what that means right now. Yeah. So whenever that does come out, I Used to Go Here. I'm very proud of that movie. Great cast. Chris is a great writer, director. Like I said, I directed this one episode of this doc series that will be on Disney Plus at some point this year. There's no release dates or anything. So I don't know. I did these Fear Street movies that are really fun. I don't know how they were supposed to come out this summer. I don't know what anything means. Those were really fun. That's the one where I jumped over a counter and they had to bring in the stunt double. And I guess watch Don't Think Twice. You've given it a resounding endorsement with this podcast.
I highly recommend that.
I don't know where it's available on Netflix in the US. I don't know about globally, so I can't tell you that. And I did a scripted podcast you can listen to called Blood Ties. It's available where you get podcasts. You can listen to that now. It came out last year. We're doing a second season.
The community table read is still online.
Oh yeah, that's on YouTube. Oh well, that one also we did in support of two great charities. Mm-hmm. This is what I should be talking about.
Yes.
I organized a prop giveaway, and experience giveaway with Prizio and Entertainment Weekly. So I found all these props from community around my house as I've been cleaning. And I got some of the other cast members to find things as well. And so you can win various props, but also you can win an appearance on Joel McHale and Ken Jeong's podcast, The Darkest Line Podcast. You can win like a 20-minute Zoom hangout with members of the cast. I'm going to, you know, give away one of the sweaters I wore on the show. People are going to sign Funko dolls. And that's all to support World Central Kitchen and Frontline Foods. So enter that through Prizio and watch the table read. And you can donate also to support World Central Kitchen and Frontline Foods. So that should have been top.
You should have opened with that. But that's
I should have opened with that. Closing strong.
Closed with a load of films. I don't know if they'll even exist one day.
I know, right? But, that may never come out now. But yeah, that was very exciting to get the gang back together in support of great charities. So check out. You can watch it on YouTube on Community's YouTube page.
It's really great. It was great.
Thank you.
Gillian Jacobs, what a pleasure and a delight. I hope you have a lovely death and good night. I'm going to stop
good
recording.
Night.
Thank you.
Good night and good luck.
Good night. So that was episode 103. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets and the full uncut video with Gillian. Yes, Gillian, I get it now. Could you also go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating? And instead of writing about the podcast, write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's a lovely thing to read. It helps our numbers and it means Maureen can swim in craft beer forever. Thank you so much to Gillian for doing this show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Leiden for the artwork. Come join me next week, where I will be performing another resurrection with a very special guest, Mr. Ed Gamble. Has he been on the show before? Well, find out next week. So that is it for now. I hope you all have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. No, thank you.